Chapter 5. Quinn. Quinn despises the USS Enterprise from the first moment she's beamed aboard. It's nothing personal. She hates most Starfleet vessels these days. Huge, gleaming, and incomprehensibly sterile, completely divorced from life as Quinn experiences it. She is a child of river deltas and tall grasses and heavy rains, of dirt and sweat and growing things. She'll gladly take even the driest desert sands or the clinging salt scent of endless oceans over this pristine flying box. Jim loves his ship. She can tell from the way his whole body relaxes into the space as he materializes, the subtle shift in how he holds himself. Well, good for him, she supposes. Someone has to. "Welcome back, sir," the transporter operator tells him with a smile, which Jim returns easily. "Glad to see you haven't trashed the place in my absence," he replies. "Ensign Rand, these folks will be my personal guests for the next week or so. Could you scrounge up appropriate accommodations for them? And please ask Commander Spock to join us in my ready room as soon as he's available." Rand shoots the rest of them a curious glance, but offers no comment. She takes their single collective duffel bag from Nikki with his nod of assent and heads off as instructed. "Well, that buys us a little time," Jim says once she's gone. "We're lucky Rand was on transporter duty. The other operations officers are all terrible gossips. But we'll have to come up with a plausible explanation for your presence pretty quickly." Strangers on board a starship are bound to cause a minor stir, even on so large a one as the Enterprise, which has hundreds of crew members. It reminds Quinn of the thousands of villages she has passed through over her long life, tight-knit communities in which everyone is known by sight, instinctively wary of outsiders. Fortunately, they have long practice at making themselves unobtrusive. They're all dressed in simple, neutral clothing, akin to Starfleet's standard off-duty wear, and, as with anywhere else, the best way to fit in is to act like you're supposed to be there. Quinn feels her body fall into the brisk gait of an officer with important but not urgent business to attend to. Most of the crew they pass in the ship's corridors hardly give them a second glance, apart from exchanging greetings with their captain. The ready room is sleek, well-appointed, and extremely boring. Quinn despairs of the 23rd century and its collective hard-on for minimalism. The red upholstery on the chairs provides the only splash of actual color, possibly to avoid clashing with the cheerful primary colors of Starfleet uniforms, she thinks wryly. Jim sprawls rather than sits in his own chair and gestures for the rest of them to follow suit. As always, Niall looks the most comfortable behind the conference table, her experience in Starfleet Command settling over her like a mantle. A stranger walking in might confuse her for the captain rather than Jim. The rest of them arrange themselves with studied casualness. Booker looks like he's considering propping his feet up on the table, but restrains himself. "How much are you willing to disclose to your first officer?" Niall asks. Jim shrugs. "In terms of your business, as much as you're willing to share. I can vouch for Spock's discretion." "I was actually referring to our history with you, unless you think he'll accept us on your word alone." "Oh, he'll only trust you about as far as he can throw you," Jim says cheerfully. "But he'll hear you out, and in the end, he'll follow my lead. Might give me hell for it in private later, but that's my problem, not yours." "It sounds like you have a strong working relationship," Joe remarks. "How long have you two served together?" Quinn tunes out the idle chit-chat that ensues, centering herself in her memories from Vulcan. Logic and ordered thoughts will carry more weight than emotional entreaties. They appealed to Jim's sense of adventure and strong emotional connection to their shared history. Spock will require clear, concise, rational arguments. It isn't long before the door whooshes quietly open and Spock himself appears. He's a tall, pale-skinned Vulcan dressed in the bright blue uniform of a science officer. The color suits him. His dark eyes are assessing as he regards them, his face otherwise expressionless. Quinn gets to her feet smoothly and raises a hand in the traditional Vulcan salute. "Commander Spock, I presume," she says, and then adds, in the Vulcan language, "We come to serve." If he's surprised by a human's command of his tongue or the formal diplomatic greeting, It is evidenced only in the barest lift of one eyebrow. "Your service honors us," he replies, returning the gesture. In English, he goes on, "It seems you have the advantage of me. The captain gave me advance notice of your visit, but did not provide your names." After a round of introductions and pleasantries, Spock takes the last remaining chair at Jim's right hand. "Tell me then, what is your business aboard the Enterprise?" The captain was sparing with the details. "Oh, their business isn't with the ship, Spock," Jim says, leaning back in his chair with a grin. "They're here for you." Spock doesn't frown, exactly, but his eyes narrow ever so slightly. "I do not understand. Please elaborate." "We're trying to make contact with a citizen of New Vulcan," Niall says, discreetly. "We were hoping you'd be able to help." "I am sure that if you were to reach out through the proper diplomatic channels," Niall shakes her head, polite but firm. "There's no time for that. This woman's life may be in danger. There was an explosion on a VSA lab on New Vulcan last week. We have good reason to believe she was the intended target." That's a stretch, in Quinn's opinion. The explosion that killed the new immortal might well have been accidental, but it lends credence to an otherwise thin story. Spock's gaze turns sharper somehow. "An explosion on New Vulcan? We have not received any such reports." "It would, of course, be logical for you to reach out to your own contacts on planet to verify," Quinn says, keeping her own expression impassive to match his. "We don't expect you to take us at face value, but the threat to this individual is very real and urgent." "Where are you receiving your own intelligence on this matter, and who is the Vulcan individual in question?" "Our sources are classified," Niall says, "and unfortunately, we don't have a name for her yet, only a description, and that she's most likely a scientist with the VSA. Joe here is quite the sketch artist," Jim puts in. "Want to have a look? Since, of course, all Vulcans know each other." Joe retrieves the folded-up drawing from his jacket pocket and slides it across the table to Spock, who is shooting his captain a withering look even as he accepts the paper. "I am obviously not acquainted with all 10,000-plus citizens of the New Vulcan colony," but when he looks down at the sketch, his eyebrows leap toward his hairline. Jim leans forward in gleeful anticipation. "Holy shit! You actually recognize her, don't you?" "I do," Spock confirms. "Her name is T'Pring." Quinn exchanges a quick glance with Joe and Nikki across the table, sees her own growing excitement mirrored there. They hadn't dared to hope it might be this easy. "Would you be willing to put us in contact with her?" Nikki asks. "I do not," Spock shakes his head, cutting himself off. "One moment. You said she was a scientist. That is not possible. T'Pring has many talents, but she never expressed any inclination toward the VSA as either student or researcher." "It was our working theory, but we may have been mistaken," Niall allows. But Quinn vividly remembers that first dream in the lab. The woman wore the uniform of the Vulcan Science Academy without question. She recognized it at once. "I am sure that many of your people's priorities have shifted in the last few years," she says, treading carefully through this potential minefield. "Still waters run deep. Vulcans may not express their emotions openly, but they do still feel. And there is certainly a need for good scientists on your new planet. T'Pring may have logically reevaluated her career aspirations in light of these circumstances." "I would deem that unlikely in this particular instance," Spock says, a little stiffly, "but perhaps not entirely outside the realm of possibility. Regardless," he turns to Jim. "Captain, what reason do you have to trust these people? I do not mean to question your judgment, but this is highly irregular, as is their story. They are not Starfleet. Have they even been cleared by security?" "They have," Jim says, unruffled. "Booker sent their credentials over for a background check before they were beamed aboard." Booker gives Spock an ironic salute. "And you're right, they fly an independent vessel, but that doesn't mean they're bullshitting you." Spock presses his lips tightly together. His tone remains even. "I must ask again, sir, why do you trust them?" Jim meets his direct gaze without blinking. "Because they're the team that intervened on Tarsus IV when Starfleet wouldn't." "Ah, Quinn thinks, satisfied, gauging Spock's subtle reaction to that information. So Jim has more than just a strong working relationship with his first officer. That certainly improves their chances of getting to New Vulcan. "Very well," Spock says, more softly now. His shoulders slump ever so slightly in what might be either resignation or relief. "I must think on this. I do not currently have a line of communication open with T'Pring myself, but there are others in the colony I might reach out to assess the veracity of your claims." "By all means," Niall says. "I'd be interested to hear what Vulcans are saying about the lab explosion, but your discretion would be greatly appreciated in this matter. T'Pring is still in danger, and the threat may come from within the colony itself." "Yes," Spock murmurs, "it very well might." He shakes his head, as if to clear it, and rises to his feet. "Captain, if I may?" Jim nods, gesturing expansively. "Go for it, but don't take too long meditating on this one, okay? If they're right..." "I understand the urgency. Indeed, I share it. While T'Pring and I may no longer be bonded, I do still naturally feel some concern for her continued well-being." Quinn blinks at that. The rest of her family may not understand the implications of bonding for a Vulcan, but she certainly does. "My apologies, Commander Spock," she says, incredulous, "but do you mean to say that this woman was your, betrothed?" A muscle at the corner of Spock's jaw twitches. "She was once, yes." "You're what now?" Jim yelps. "Can't say I saw any of that coming," Niall remarks, some hours later, when she and Quinn are settling into their shared guest room. Quinn huffs out a laugh. It has certainly been an enlightening day. They and the boys have been given adjoining rooms, likely unused crew quarters, with three bunks each and a shared washroom. The space is well-appointed and comfortable, if a bit cramped. Not exactly the ambassadorial suite, but then again, they are trying to keep a low profile. Jim couldn't show them obvious preferential treatment without prompting a lot of questions they'd much rather avoid. She wonders how the boys are doing, packed three to a room like this one, and whether Joe and Nikki are trying to squeeze into the same narrow bunk together rather than split up for the night. Oh, who is she kidding? Of course they are. Every now and then, she misses Andromache with a ferocity undimmed by the passage of time. "What are the odds, huh?" Niall muses, propping her chin up on one hand. "That the one Vulcan we could wrangle a connection with just happens to be our new immortal's ex." "Well, we do specialize in long odds." Quinn tries to keep her tone light, but can't quite shake her sudden mood. "Nikki would say it's because we're meant to find one another." Niall snorts. "You know, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he told me when I first met the team. But I guess it's as good an explanation for the dreams as anything else." The dreams, yes. As vague and frustrating as they may be, they do point us in the right direction. Eventually. Quinn hugs her knees to her chest and stares out at nothing in particular. "You know, when Lycan died, it was devastating. It shouldn't have been possible. Our entire little world, everything we'd come to believe about ourselves, was upended just like that." She snaps her fingers. "And within only a few years, the dreams of Yusuf and Niccolo began, as though to compensate us for our loss." She can hear rustling from the other bunk, feel the weight of Niall's full gaze upon her. She so rarely speaks of Lycan, she's not sure how often Andy ever did, to Niall. "Perhaps the timing was just a coincidence," she goes on, "and when Booker arrived, centuries later, while I was still beneath the ocean, nothing else changed. But then Andromache lost her immortality within days of your first awakening." "Quinn, please understand that I have never blamed you for this," Quinn says quietly. "Myself, yes, often, illogical though that may be, but correlation is not causation. Even at my lowest point, I still knew that. And I will always be grateful for the decades we still had with her afterward. That was a gift, even if I could not grow old and gray alongside her, as I once dreamed. She runs a hand through her hair, cropped short of late. She likes the feel of the wind on her bare neck. Not that there's any wind on a starship. After a few moments, Niall breaks the silence. So when these new dreams started, Quinn exhales a long breath. I just can't help but wonder if there's a connection. Passing the torch, if you will. Have you tested it? Niall asks. There's no judgment in her tone. Not yet. Quinn looks down at her own hands, unchanged in millennia. She has, though, to Pring. I dreamed of a knife and green-tinged blood. Yeah, I dreamed that too. When Quinn lifts her gaze, she finds Niall looking steadily back at her. You know, we got lucky with Andy. We almost lost her. She knew she wasn't healing, but she didn't tell anyone else, and then Booker. She shakes her head. Anyway, what happened, happened. But if you think there's any chance, Quinn, wouldn't it be better to know for sure? It's just a silly notion, Quinn knows. She doesn't really believe the immortality works this way. Not to mention, Lycan was the youngest of them when he met his final death. Why assume she would be next? But she retrieves a pocket knife from her little bundle of belongings. Archaic, yes, but she's a practical woman, and there are many uses for a blade. And makes a quick cut across her own palm, shallow but decisive, just as Dupring had done in her dream. She and Niall both watch it heal cleanly within seconds. Well then, Niall says, with a small but sincere smile. Not today, at least. Not today, Quinn agrees, and realizes that her predominant emotional reaction is relief. That is a good thing to know about oneself, she decides, feeling curiously content about the whole situation. And with a little luck, soon they will meet their new sister. It's nice to have something to look forward to. They reconvene after breakfast, again in the captain's lifeless ready room. Quinn itches to set the dull gray carpeting on fire. Since we last spoke, I have requested and received conflicting intelligence from the new Vulcan colony, Spock tells them, his spine ramrod straight. You were correct about the laboratory explosion, yet I cannot get a clear answer as to its cause or the scope of destruction. One report indicated that it was a minor accident, hardly even worthy of mention. Another reported multiple casualties. My father would only speak of it in the vaguest terms and denied Dupring's involvement. However, current VSA records do note her as a geneticist on staff. A geneticist! When last I knew her, Dupring specialized in psychological counseling and rehabilitation, and while those skills could certainly be applied to advanced scientific research, she has no background whatsoever in genetics. I cannot reconcile these disparate facts. Sounds like something's rotten in the state of Denmark after all, Jim remarks, and your ex-girlfriend's tangled up in it. Spock's lips thin. I have been unable to ascertain any further information on her current whereabouts or status. That's where we come in, Niall says, calm and assured. We specialize in retrieval and extraction. We share the same goal right now, getting to Pring out of this situation alive and safe without causing any ruckus. Whatever else is going on here, it seems like she may have some of the answers you seek. We won't know until we reach her. The Enterprise's current mission is non-critical and in no way time-sensitive, Jim adds. Bones and Uhura have it well at hand. They can spare us for a few days. We're only 4 hours away from New Vulcan by warp. Nothing preventing you from a family visit, plus a few diplomatic reassurances of the Federation's continued and visible support of the colony. We just need an excuse to bring these guys down along with us. A contingent of our science department is currently coordinating joint research with the VSA. Spock says slowly, thinking it through. They would appreciate the opportunity to interface with their counterparts in person, I suppose. Quinn smiles. Perfect. Nikki and I both have backgrounds in the sciences. We simply need spare blue uniforms. Across the table, Nikki gives her a nod. I am a trained medic, he explains for Spock's benefit, massively understating his decades spent in Starfleet Medical. And Quinn worked in R&D for a time. Which is to say, she's an expert at making things blow up. but Spock doesn't need to know the specifics. The rest of us can accompany you as security officers, Niall agrees. I believe that's still standard protocol for diplomatic missions of this nature. Jim claps his hands together once. Excellent. Spock will try to get a straight answer from his dad in person, while I make nice with the rest of the Vulcan Council, and meanwhile, you guys can infiltrate the VSA with our science geeks, see if you can figure out what the hell is going on down there. A three-pronged attack. Wanna place bets on who gets to T'Pring first? Spock sighs, closing his eyes briefly. If he were human, Quinn would think he was praying for patience. But that, surely, would be illogical. End of chapter 5.